want to start by saying it. I had to comment on, I think the last panel, it was Christine from Delta who remarked that she graduated from this great school about 25 years ago, and how in the world she ended up in with Delta and with the position she's in now. And I feel like I've got a little one up on that because I essentially sell fish and seafood, and I'm not really sure how that happened. I do know how that happened, but I love being back here. I'm fortunate to only live a couple hours away and do get up here quite a bit to Charlottesville, but I haven't really been back in here in the law school for a while, and I love the opportunity to be here. I feel like I know I'm a little bit different in many ways than a lot of the prior panelists, and I'm going to apologize for something a bit. I know I'm going to end up feeling like I'm reading a little bit more than just sort of speaking off the cuff on issues like I could if we were just talking about shrimp or fish, and we can certainly do that. Or some other passion issues that I have, like trade, which certainly intersects with this issue. But I felt challenged, but also excited to have the opportunity to talk a little bit about CSR, because as I'm going to get into with who we are and the type of company we are and our role in the global supply chain, it's evident that there's not a day that goes by and hardly an hour that goes by in our office that there's not something related to CSR on my desk or happening in our office, and yet we don't have a CSR person. Or even some of the formal corporate social responsibility initiatives, although we do have some, but in the ways or the positions that some of the prior panelists were talking about. So I'll get into that a bit. What came to mind that I thought would be a good way to sort of tackle this talk was, I thought it'd be interesting to take you through some of the day-to-day is what we do as a smaller company under the umbrella of corporate social responsibility, and highlight what I see as some of the biggest challenges that companies like ours face. Companies who are integral parts of the supply chain, but classified as a small, medium enterprise with a significantly smaller staff. How do we work to engage on issues, and what are some of the biggest hurdles that we face to try to move the ball in a positive way? Who we are and what we do as a company, let me take a few minutes to get into that a bit. I think, again, I think it's critically important to understand how a company like ours, especially working in a sector like global agriculture within developing countries, sort of what our challenges and role is, and I think you can only do that if you really get an understanding of what we actually do as a company day to day. Plus, if you remember nothing else about this talk today, maybe next time you go to the supermarket or restaurant and order some fish or shrimp, you might remember something that I mentioned today, and that would make it worthwhile. We are a dedicated direct importer and distributor of frozen seafood caught from or farmed from all over the world. We work directly and produce with producers on the ground from China to Argentina, from Vietnam to Peru. We work in constant direct communication with large seafood processing facilities, sometimes dealing with wild-caught items, sometimes with smaller facilities and farmers working with local independent fish farms. We import millions of pounds of frozen seafood in a variety of shape, size, and packages. We ship everything here via ocean container and bring it into shipping ports all over the United States. We store product in various cold storages from which we ship to a wide array of customers all over the country, large supermarket chains, large restaurant chains, smaller restaurant chains, institutional buyers, value-added U.S. manufacturers. A key point in all of this is that we are the company and the people on the ground and the front lines in the trenches, if you will, as the face and as a direct contact with the owners, managers, workers, and fishermen in facilities in other countries, working to source and procure product that ultimately makes its way to other, often much larger companies who procure product that also ultimately make its way to the consumer. Our product will often end up on the shelves of the largest supermarkets in the country or on the menu with national restaurant chains or even smaller local restaurants. On a daily basis, we are the liaison between the overseas producers on the one hand and the food buyers here in the United States on the other, which is not to say that there are not many items directly imported by these large customers of ours, companies like Walmart or Target. But I can tell you in the supply chain, especially in global agriculture, a tremendous amount of what need to be considered small or medium-sized enterprises are actually a key part of the supply chain. And this dynamic alone is something that can lead to some of the most challenging issues in order to try to effectively manage global corporate social responsibility in many industries. We have fewer than 20 people in our office, However, we are responsible for importing between 500 and 1,000 full containers a year of frozen seafood. A container is roughly the equivalent of a tractor trailer that you see on the road, and it can hold approximately 40, 45,000 pounds at a time. Therefore, one way to look at things is that we handle 30 to 40 million pounds of seafood each year. And if you consider approximately 4 ounces to be a serving size for a meal, that makes us responsible for a key part of over 100 million meals served each year in this country. And as I try to paint the picture of the global supply chain, the seafood industry, here's an interesting statistic or thought to digest. While there are actually no perfect statistics measuring this, best estimates put the number at around 80 to 85% of all seafood consumed in this country supplied by imported product. And to put this in further perspective, resource management in the United States, which is something I'll touch on later, is considered excellent in terms of maintaining sustainable fisheries, meaning we essentially catch all we can catch in this country, and we farm all that we can farm, and so we produce seafood, domestic seafood, at essentially maximum sustainable yields. Yet, this really only supplies around 15 to 20% of total demand in this country, and with the notion that demand will continue to increase in the future. So this is not a country that, even at maximum capacity, can produce anything close to annual demand, and therefore is heavily reliant on global supply and trade from virtually every corner of the world. I think so often when, during discussions about corporate social responsibility in a global context, one really thinks about the Nikes, the Walmarts, the Targets, the Whirlpools, Fortune 100 or 500 companies who have dedicated CSR staff essentially overseeing the issues and as the face of various topics. And certainly from the private sector, it is larger companies who are leading voices in many ways, and they are the ones who do face the consumer. But that just simply doesn't create the clearest picture of how a supply chain really looks on many of these items. And it is often a company like ours, a small, medium enterprise, termed an SME, who has the specific job of working with overseas producers or stakeholders trying to manage, educate, and maneuver through some of these very complex issues. Before going any further, I should give a little definition to, a technical definition to what a small medium enterprise or SME really is. Very, very simply, small companies are generally defined in this country as those with fewer than 50 employees, and a medium-sized company is generally in the 50 to 250 range. This definition is generally more about the number of people working for the company and less on the measurement of revenue or business activity. SMEs have always been an active and important player in global trade, but perhaps more so today than people realize, because we live in a world where technology has led to such significantly higher worker productivity numbers, meaning there's simply more business that can be done with fewer actual people. Therefore, while some may guess that SMEs have a dwindling role in global commerce in a world that seems at times overtaken by giant multinational corporations, in fact, it may be the opposite happening, with some smaller companies finding ways to flourish with powerful technologies, making it that much more important to think deeply about the role and challenges for SMEs in large global issues. And again, this seems especially true in the world of global agriculture trade, where there is a premium placed on niche expertise across many different items, and the need for experience working with relationships and building relationships on the ground in unique industries and places all over the world. So what does this really mean for us as a company on a micro level? What issues do I or our company deal with every day? In the seafood world, global CSR covers an extremely wide range of very important and challenging topics. Each topic obviously could be a presentation unto itself, so I don't mean to minimize anything here by just touching on a few things briefly. But I do want to give you a specific look at some of the issues that touch our office and our desks every day. And by way of definition, how we see CSR is simply a way to take corporate responsibility to help lead when possible and to react when needed to address a wide range of social and environmental issues, including human rights, corporate governance, sustainable resources, environmental effects, product health and safety, working conditions, and local community support. The work in our company on these issues generally takes one of two forms. One form is more customer-driven and involves constant work we do to help verify and certify to our customers that our production partners are doing what they say they're doing on any number of issues. The other form involves projects that we try and originate at Maritime in an effort to help lead and raise the bar. Projects that are not driven by a particular corporate customer or even necessarily in the moment by the markets, but rather are an area where we see opportunities to lead and make a difference, sometimes with company initiatives, other times as part of larger coalition of industry initiatives. What does this mean? What are some of the specific examples in our office? Well, I'm in the food business again. So product quality, health, and safety is a fascinating area, in my opinion, as it relates to CSR work. We are producing and selling food, so at a minimum, we have nothing if we are not laser focused on ever-evolving global laws and regulations regarding food production and quality standards, including production in parts, many parts of the world, where consumers may have perceived concerns. The seafood industry has actually been one of the most proactive, in fact, of all the global food industries, helping raise some bars related to health and safety standards in ways that I would guess many do not realize. For example, this industry was a very early proactive proponent a couple of decades ago in what is known as the HACCP system for food safety, HACCP, H-A-C-C-P, standing for Hazard Analysis of Critical Control Points, a well-respected food safety management system that is now required for every facility producing seafood from all over the world, and something that has also been recognized and adopted by all countries as part of their regulatory requirements. However, this is really just a baseline today of how our industry manages initial health and safety protocols. Where we really delve into more classic CSR work in this area is how our industry and other stakeholders are working to raise the bar in areas such as additives in food processing. This is one of the more active topics in all of food production today, how to produce on a larger scale in the most natural way possible, and how to produce on a larger and do so in a way that still fits in some ways with market demands and economics. It does little good to produce food in a better way in this regard if it leads to cost issues that suddenly make products unavailable to wider markets or not desired by consumers. Food additives have been developed for different reasons over the years, sometimes related to taste, sometimes visual aesthetics, sometimes with very important preservation properties that can help better bring products that may otherwise not be available in certain markets. However, not only has some of this processing been misused in ways that have taken things away from its original intent, but there are absolutely undeniable advantages of less processed food in many ways. There's intense industry ongoing today on this topic, and buyers and consumers have a growing range of seafood options with less processing and fewer additives at any time in the recent past. We need to do more work in this area from a number of angles. Technical work to continue moving in a better direction, educational work, so buyers and consumers can better understand the range of options, regulatory work to help ensure standards and testing are efficient and meaningful, and political work to help ensure we are legitimately raising the bar for the environment and the world and not just for certain political constituencies. Human rights and worker conditions, obviously an extremely important topic and one that I know was discussed in different ways here today. This is a particularly interesting area, again, in our industry, given the dynamic I've noted about how reliant we are in this country on global trade from many corners of the world. It is a cliche, but it is accurate to note that the world is so much flatter and transparent today regarding international supply chains. One effect of this is that it is so much easier today compared to any time in human history to observe, inspect, and properly verify activities and facilities in every corner of the world, including virtually all developing countries. It is interesting that I know I live in a bit of a seafood bubble, so perhaps my perceptions are not entirely accurate, but I think they are in this point. I'm fairly confident in saying that many in the public will assume that global seafood supply chains have an inordinate share of social issues, partially because of where we operate, and perhaps are not a good global story regarding human rights and worker conditions. However, I'm here to tell you that the track record has actually been quite strong in this area, as evidenced by several things. One is a great deal of proactive work that is ongoing today that most wouldn't know about because it doesn't make its way necessarily to the face of the consumer, but on third-party certification bodies helping verify supply chains in a way like never before. And this is combined with what has historically been a lack of issues despite some of the deepest and largest quantity of global eyes actually looking upon our industry. No industry is perfect, and there have been issues. I think the most recent was a significant issue in the past couple of years related to a segment of shrimp production in Thailand. Received a lot of media, and it should have. However, issues like this have been the extreme exception when viewed as a percentage of the breadth of global seafood production, and industry response to issues like this have been swift and meaningful. And while the seafood industry has been historically very proactive, requiring verified product safety inspections and meaningful facility inspections, over the past several years, there has been a strong parallel wave of social inspection programs that have developed right on this point. Therefore, much of our work today in this area is working closely and personally with our production partners on the ground overseas so we see with our own eyes what is happening, along with serious certification programs from inspection agencies regarding social audits. One of the challenges today is that there are, in fact, so many active companies in this inspection and certification arena that work needs to be done to ensure we are being smart and efficient regarding how we approach things. It is not uncommon for us to have to ask a single facility overseas to submit itself to multiple inspections from different agencies because different customers have different agencies with whom they've partnered. And this is something that isn't always the most efficient or effective way to achieve these goals. Sustainable fisheries and resource management, a critically important subject given the number of species in the world with the complex nature of ecosystems and various programs in place to try to manage fisheries. It is also a complex area as our industry is essentially split today regarding overall production in terms of essentially 50-50 between wild-caught and farm-raised seafood, and they are very, very different systems to analyze. Yet regardless of the technical aspects, the issue is a non-negotiable aspect in our industry today. The formality of how we manage things now and the involvement of the private sector is vastly different today than it was 25 years ago, really even 10, 15 years ago. Today, virtually every medium or large buyer and plenty of smaller ones require various forms of formal certification and verified resource management for any given species, and a significant number of species in every corner of the world maintain some form of formal and verifiable resource management. This means that as a company, we may work to maintain essentially a full database regarding the sustainability programs of all the items we carry so that we can engage as needed through the supply chain. In addition, we have been active participants at a baseline level, helping individual species and producers to go down the road of certification. We believe this is part of our responsibility in the supply chain today, and we know we're not alone in this belief, along with our competitors. For example, before a wild-caught fishery can even achieve any chance of being recognized with formal certification, it must spend time, often years, undergoing scientific analysis in what is called in our industry a FIP, F-I-P, a fishery improvement project, a deep dive overseen by science-based third-party agencies. It is easily a six-figure, sometimes higher, investment to go down this road, and as one can imagine, it can be a challenge to organize all the stakeholders with the financial investments necessary for such work, especially in developing countries or with smaller niche species. While the model is most often the fisheries themselves making the full investments, it is becoming more common for companies in our position and others in the supply chain to join with financial support, something we are doing now, for example, with a wild-caught shrimp caught off the coast of Argentina. We do have a bit of an alphabet soup issue regarding communication on this subject, both within the industry and related to efforts to educate the consumer, often with some form of eco-label. MSC, ASC, BAP, Global Gap, Fishwise, Food Alliance, Fair Trade Capture, these are just some of the names essentially competing for the space in this system. There are also elaborate rating systems developed by a number of global and U.S. aquariums, such as the Monterey Bay Aquarium and others in this space, some of which spark some controversial discourse because technical evaluations can be different even when looking at the same data. And separate from all of this can sometimes be proprietary systems adopted by individual private sector corporations, such as supermarket chains, touting their own system of analysis. We do need to do a better job in this area of somehow consolidating efforts to create more effective consumer education, in my opinion, as we move forward. However, there's no question that part of our daily work is now working through these different means to ensure not only that resources are being managed in the most effective and sustainable way possible, but that we are communicating these issues down the supply chain with the hope that buyers and consumers can feel more confident that they are supporting an industry that values these efforts. Now, I could touch on a couple of other subjects. Climate and carbon footprint is obviously a huge issue in all industries, and there is consistent work being done by companies throughout the supply chain on issues such as more environmentally friendly packaging, as well as many good examples I've seen of work being done to try to use better alternative forms of energy to help even in small ways power production facilities. And all of what I'm referring to so far just touches on the products that we're selling. It hasn't even begun to touch on work that we do every day and other SMEs I know try to do to lead related to trying to give back to local communities, especially in developing countries. I sense this is especially true in agricultural-based industries producing often in rural areas all over the world. As an example, we import a significant amount of product from Vietnam, and I've served on the board of directors and been very active in an organization called the Children of Vietnam. It is a terrific organization, helping alleviate poverty and often children with disabilities in Vietnam. It is not based precisely where our products are produced in Vietnam. It happens to be a charity that I actually became involved with based on some other friends I had 20, 25 years ago from UVA. But one of the aspects that I've really tried to focus on with Children of Vietnam is trying to educate others in Vietnam, including other corporations there, about the work going on the ground in their own country on this issue. It is a relatively new concept in developing countries like Vietnam to be as proactive and supportive of local charities. We're talking about countries that are, in some ways, just really developing their system of commerce, global commerce, in the last 15, 20, 25 years, especially with the United States and Vietnam. So seeing things like this and driving home the meaning of what this means for Vietnamese companies getting involved with their own organizations like this has been a terrific thing to really be a part of. Seeing things like this also helps drive home the meaning of the importance of the personal relationships that inevitably develop across many international industries. Again, especially industries like agriculture that involve smaller and medium enterprises working together across borders. Now, with this background of examples of how we actually engage on some of the issues, I do want to spend a couple minutes trying to highlight what, through my experience, has been some of the biggest functional challenges faced by companies like ours working on CSR issues. I don't have any answers to what some of these challenges are, but I do think it is critical to recognize why some issues in industries struggle a bit more than others at times for better solutions. The first and really largest overarching challenge that I feel like we encounter on this issue is what I would call the challenge of efficient engagement across the universe of stakeholders for a company our size, shape, and make, and in an industry that touches so many important global policy issues, but is also very globally fragmented. This may be a bit of an oversimplification, but generally the roadmap for development on many CSR projects revolves around discourse and work between large NGOs, the largest global corporations on the planet, and depending on the issue, possibly government agency involvement, and as well as academia. This is not unusual, and of course, from private sector, it makes all the sense in the world for the largest companies to be proactive leaders on issues, even if they are not the ones in certain industries in charge of ultimate importing or management, for example, new standards or verification programs. These are still the companies that are often selling the final product and therefore the face to the consumer. However, every single one of these issues is, in reality, quite complicated, and it does ultimately require getting deep into the weeds on any issue to try to build a solution in an efficient and proper manner. Yet it is often and ultimately companies like ours who are the ones on the front lines at times with the most technical expertise, as well as what can be decades of firsthand experience, building relationships on the ground with these producers in areas that ultimately everybody is trying to influence. It therefore seems critical that somehow from the start and when building a foundation and defining the problems and possible solutions to make absolutely sure to be fully inclusive of stakeholders like ours closest to the actual productions and the ones who essentially will be responsible for full implementation and verification. It doesn't mean we could or even should have an equal voice, but too many times we have virtually no voice until programs have become fully developed. This is not a problem unique to global CSR. In many contexts, of course, smaller voices, regardless of their knowledge or expertise, have trouble getting a seat at a table. It is never a problem with an easy solution, but it is a problem. So many of these issues are complex, and with the need for long-term solutions that involve influence and stakeholder buy-in at all levels, and somehow we need to find a way to do a better job at the earliest levels of discussions to ensure the widest range of diverse and experienced stakeholder input. When we are not as inclusive as we could be with the dialogue at an early stage, we risk something that I've seen too often over the years. We risk losing proper definition of some issues from the start. We risk poor prioritizing of issues, and we ultimately risk creating structures that may sound great in theory, but in fact are almost impossible to apply to real-world situations. We also risk creating new regulatory structures that may be the most well-meaning in the world, but sometimes are putting a square peg into a very round hole. One other functional issue we have experienced is what I see sometimes as a bit of a continued internal disconnect within some of the larger private sector companies involved with certain kinds of CSR projects. The disconnect can exist with our customers, large companies that mandate real change, but then fall short managing proper oversight of those efforts within their own companies. Virtually every initiative that we could talk about with CSR creates some degree of higher cost for a product in a supply chain. Sometimes the cost can be marginal, sometimes substantial, especially in the world of agriculture with lower priced items, but it is almost always real. It is a problem when a foreign producer spends the time and effort to create real change, and companies like ours oversee and verify those changes and spend the time and money on these efforts. But then downstream, the U.S. customers who have essentially mandated that we get to this point are not as supportive in the long run of the suppliers who have actually done the work when a product does in fact become a bit more expensive. This is usually not an issue when companies are leading changes to their own manufactured items. So for example, new energy and environmental standards for appliances, for appliance manufacturers making their own products. They have already had a full understanding of cost that an analysis that they've gone through, and gain commitments and buy-in throughout their company and organization for things to go forward. However, for items that companies are not manufacturing and are importing on their own, and there are many of these items, I believe the largest corporations who are often trying to lead the changes need to do a better job of internal education and coordination, often with their own procurement teams. It might sound like something relatively easy to address, but we see it far too often. And it creates, again, a real long-term issue. It can send a very bad message to the foreign producer and SME partner who is trying to raise standards, as it can erode exactly the type of trust that must be cultivated if we want to see meaningful global policy development for the long term. I know companies can do better in this area, and they must as we move forward. And finally, to try to tie all this up, I would make one additional point on something that I think has been referred to in some different ways on some different panels, and I'd be remiss not to mention. You're never going to meet anybody than the person standing here right now who's more passionate in the belief in the merits and the overall value of free and vibrant international trade. There are many faces and complexities of global trade, but one is certain, one non-negotiable. And one fact, in my opinion, is the role it needs to play, and indeed must play, in efforts to address complex global social issues that range from how foreign companies can better address climate change, to the most effective way to ensure worker and human rights, to how to raise the bar regarding the food we eat. There is simply no other mechanism other than international trade and the personal relationships that such trade cultivates across borders that will have the same positive effect on global policy issues. I think it was the last panel that Bill mentioned something, maybe some paper about the notion of can companies save the world? I'm a little extreme in this regard, but I would almost suggest only companies that can save the world. Now that's extreme because it's companies working with NGOs, it's working with others, of course. But it ultimately is the flow of commerce and the relationships that develop across border transactions that are going to be are absolutely necessary and a part of the world and the only way we're going to raise standards everywhere. I do fear where we are right now in some of our dialogue and how we are engaging in many directions on trade. I don't mean this as a completely partisan comment. Maybe a little bit, but not really, because I could give you numerous examples across administrations of issues that I've seen and mistakes that I believe we have made over the past several administrations. I do think this one is putting us in a particularly rough place when it comes to how we think about global trade and how we engage on that issue. I just hope we do not lose sight of the power of trade on all of these issues. I'd leave you today with a message of hope and challenge on all of this. Hope that you can feel confident that there are so many companies out there that are under the radar that you've never heard of, that you will probably never hear of, smaller and with challenges as mentioned, that are working to best shepherd change, companies that are made up of people who are very passionate about trying to be a part of real solutions. You should also be hopeful, because I think in reality the picture across many issues is often much better than perceptions, and I would really urge you to dig deeply in your research to get full pictures on any given topic in this area. The challenge for you is thinking about possible opportunities to be part of that effort. Companies like ours can be harder to find, and rarely with positions that may at first glance seem like the right fit for a career with this type of passion, especially at the start of a career and after graduating from an institution like UVA Law. However, so many companies like ours are truly on the front lines, peering into the heart of some of the most complex global issues. It will be an ongoing challenge for companies like ours, our size, our industry, our dynamic with other large stakeholders, to figure out how to become more effective with our efforts and how to move the ball forward in the best possible direction. But our chances will be so much better if we can find ways to grow with people with a passion and the ability, like those who I'm sure are in this room today and who can create and inspire continued change across the globe. Thank you.